programmed it right.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis, and here's the entrance to the song, to the show.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a book, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. They never will bring you there. So let's talk about it. Well, I am on the air.
That was created by Rachel and Michael, especially for me, from Chitty House Entertainment.inc. And yeah, we are so live on the air with one of my favorite people in the whole world, Brian Freeman, and we are going to talk about something that most of us have, an alter ego. I'm beginning to wonder sometimes. So good morning. How are you? And I'm so glad you're here.
Good morning, Fran. It's always great to be on with you. I think you and I may be alter egos. I think that may be the case.
I think so, too, as a matter of fact. And I even put it at the end of my book review because, you know, after all, we all are like a little Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And I said at the end, which one are you? I'm beginning, my husband's beginning to wonder who am I, too. So when creating this novel, why did you focus on the movie industry and a very, very, very important issue of sexual misconduct, which is in the news today, every day?
Yeah, you know, this book has sort of an interesting pedigree because when I've had the plot line in mind for several years, and folks may be familiar with one of my other heroes, Cab Bolton, who is a Florida detective, very interesting Florida detective. He's 6'6" with spiky blonde hair, and he has a Hollywood mother. And so I several years ago was thinking through the idea of a plot line that would involve potentially a Hollywood sexual predator, and that somehow Cab's mother would have some history with this person. But then last year, as I was thinking through what I was going to do with the next Jonathan Stride novel, I really liked the idea of kind of taking this plot line and making it a part of Stride's world, because I came up with the idea of a film being shot on location in Duluth dealing with one of Stride's old cases. And of course, you know, that's a little nudge to the film agents. Let's get busy here, guys. But as a result, you have Stride dealing with his alter ego, this Hollywood icon who is playing him in the movie. And this Hollywood celebrity, well, he may have some secrets that he does not want exposed. And of course, so I wrote this book last summer, and I turned it in early September. And literally 2 weeks after I turned the book into my publisher, the entire Harvey Weinstein scandal broke open. And at that point, I had my editor, you know, contacting me to say, well, did you know something? Were you on the inside on this? And it was utterly a pure coincidence that the plot line has proven so remarkably timely, given everything that has broken out in the press in the past 6 months or so. But when I started, there was none of that. It was just pure coincidence.
I know. It's like, this is really – Everything about this is always in the news. It's really amazing. So, how did Stride get involved? You know, I loved Jonathan Stride, but I have a really wild question to ask about that. How did Stride get involved, and why couldn't they find the identity of John Doe? How'd they learn about him, and what was the murder that happened?
Well, you know, I always love starting my books with sort of a strange mystery that kind of sets the stage for everything that happens later. And one of the things I always like is when fate kind of throws in something, you know, completely unpredictable and random that can derail plans and open things up. So in The Burying Place, it was this young cop named Casey Kennedy getting lost in the fog on her way home. And in Alter Ego, this man is out in the middle of the empty lands northwest of Duluth in the middle of this raging blizzard in January, And we don't know what he's doing. We don't know why he's out there, but he has done something, and he's trying to get away and return home to Florida. But instead, he winds up enmeshed in a horrific and unexpected accident that leaves him dead. And when Stride and Maggie are on the case, they soon discover that this man is a ghost. He's got a driver's license from Florida, but the man who actually has that name and identity died 5 years ago. So the corpse that they have on their hands is a ghost, and he's a ghost who also has a Glock in the wreck of his car, a Glock that's been fired recently. So naturally, that raises the question for Stride and Maggie: you know, who is this man really, and why was he out in the middle of nowhere in a blizzard in Duluth, and what had he been shooting at?
That's scary. It is scary. So, of all the things, why is Stride involved with the story, the Cage Girl, and this haunts him? Because how does this haunt them? What happened to the three women and then the fourth? That was scary. And I won't tell you whether I figured something out or not, because that, I won't.
Well,
I was really good about this.
I
said, oh, my God, this is scary.
When you're writing a long-time series, and this is my 10th Jonathan Stride novel, one of the things I always make sure that I do is write the books carefully so that you can dive in anywhere. You don't have to know Stride or Maggie or Serena or any of the other series characters in order to jump in and enjoy the new book. So you can read Alter Ego as if it's a standalone, and hopefully by the end I've tempted you into going back and discovering a lot of the other Stride novels as well. But one of the ways that I keep the series fresh for new readers and for existing series readers alike is that I like to sort of explore cases from Stride's past that you haven't heard about as a series reader. And in this case, Stride is dealing with a movie called The Caged Girl. And the movie is based on a case from Stride's past. And readers have already been sort of asking, well, now which book was that in? And I was like, well, no, that actually is not in any of the other books. It's sort of brand new to this thriller. And as a result, it helps new readers understand who Stride is and the kind of man he is. And for existing series readers, it sort of gives them a new window into a part of Stride's past that they never had before. And that's part of how you keep the series fresh. So in this case, we're dealing with a killer that had struck three times shortly after Stride took over as head of the Detective Bureau in Duluth, and it was a very personal case for him, because each of the victims was forced to film or to tape an audio that arrived on Stride's desk, and the message in each case was the same: "Save me, Jonathan Stride." And so it was a very haunting, very personal introduction to his job back then. And so he failed to save three victims, ultimately was able to rescue the fourth, a woman named Lori Fulkerson, and so now the movie that is being made is all about this case. It's all about Stride and the killer, and about this fourth victim who was rescued just in time.
Yeah, wasn't she? So tell us about two very just different characters that. Well, I won't tell you if I like them or not. Dean and Jungle Jack. Dean is the star of this movie, and Jack is the...
Well, Dean Casperson is the Hollywood icon in this book, and what makes Dean such a wonderful character in real life is that actually Dean Casperson is the name of a real Duluthian, and Dean was part of a fundraiser we did last fall for the Duluth Library Foundation, and it was an opportunity for people to bid on being a character in the new Stride novel, and it turned into this wonderful bidding war between two real-life Duluthians, Dean Casperson and Lori Fulkerson, and Lori actually wound up on top in the bidding, and so she became a part of the book. And then after the auction was over, Dean came up to me and said, "Well, if I match her bid, would you put me in the book too?" And I said, "Absolutely." So Dean is a real person, but of course in the book he is this Hollywood icon. He's sort of a cross between Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise. He's got sort of a boyish charm to him, and yet he's done a lot of different roles over the years. And he's one of these Hollywood stars that has managed to keep a positive reputation in the press despite everything that goes on in Hollywood. And he's got a long time celebrity marriage, which is rare enough out there as well. And yet rumors always swirl around him, and there is this other. The sort of stunt double for Dean, who goes by the nickname Jungle Jack. And it's almost as if Jack is like an alter ego for Dean. They obviously look alike. He does the kind of the stunt double for him. And Jack is a lot coarser and sort of seems to reflect the sort of evil identity of Dean Casperson.
Well, maybe he's a little bit of the other person on him. Hence why the title, people. We've got a lot of that going on here. And Amy Bowie is bent on creating the scenes exactly as the fourth victim endured. Why? And she watches some of it, and she acts him out, and yet she doesn't feel that she's there. How come she wants to get there? Those scenes scared me. I don't keep the lights on.
Yeah,
seriously.
This is definitely one where you want to keep the lights on.
Yeah, seriously.
That's the way I like it. Amy Bowie is another of the actors in the movie, and she's actually playing the role of Laurie Fulkerson, the fourth victim. And Amy is one of these method actors that is focused on really trying to inhabit and capture the role, and so she ends up building a relationship with Serena as Serena investigates this mystery in Duluth, and also has been working to try to get Laurie Fulkerson to trust her and talk about the things that really went on inside this cage, so that she can recreate the emotions of that experience on screen. And Amy is kind of an interesting character because she has another. She has another facet of her being, which is she seems to be sort of one of these sensitives, that she sort of senses things about other people and can't quite explain how it happens.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know is it a taste of the paranormal, or is it simply that she has the kind of personality where she can sort of unconsciously recognize clues and signs about people and translate that into sort of what seems like kind of a knowledge of things that are about to happen. And this is something that sort of scares and fascinates Serena because Serena's a very level-headed, down to business kind of detective, and she mm-hmm. doesn't believe in any of this kind of stuff. And yet there are things that Amy Bowie says that start to make her wonder.
Well, my mother always used to wonder about me too, because at times I could look at somebody and tell you if I like them in 5 seconds. I can also tell you if they're what kind of person they are. It's scary sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
She said it's very perceptive, and it's not good, because either I like the person right away or bye. And yeah, Amy reminded me of that. I said, "Dear, that's so cool that you could do that." So she was one of my favorite characters. Now we have my other favorite character that reminds me a lot of my niece, because she's 17 too. And tell us about Kat. I love this kid, and her relationship with Serena, and how come she took her to the set with her. And yeah, she does remind me of my niece Carly, because Carly would have done the same thing, sort of. So how come you included that in there? I don't know if she would have gone, as you know, whatever, but yeah, she would have gone, and I don't know if she would drink, but yeah, how come you included that? That was really good. That was so typical 17. Yeah.
Well, several books ago, it was in a book called The Cold Nowhere, I introduced this teenage girl named Kat Mateo into Stride and Serena's life. And after all of the struggles of The Cold Nowhere, Stride and Serena ultimately took Kat into their lives. And Kat has been a part of their lives ever since, and has appeared in the next Stride books, Goodbye to the Dead and Marathon and now again in Alter Ego. And she's really become an integral part of the Stride series. And she's one of my favorite characters, and she's become a huge favorite with a lot of readers as well. You know, she's a teenage girl who has struggled a lot in her life, and you know, it's sort of one of those with every step forward, she seems to, you know, also take a step backward, and she's smart, doesn't necessarily make the right calls because she's a teenager. Her judgment is still young, and but what I really have been working toward in these last couple of books is building out the relationship between Stride and Serena and Cad, in terms of Stride and Serena becoming really like parents to this girl, and simultaneously Cat sort of emerging from some of the shadows of her past and letting some of her latent courage and intelligence move her forward. Doesn't necessarily mean she's going to be making the right decisions, but she's, her motives are improving, and she's doing things for the right reason, even if what she does may not always be the smartest thing in the world. One of my favorite scenes back in the last Stride novel, Marathon, was when Serena is home and the door to Cat's bedroom is closed, and Stride calls Serena to tell her that something terrible has happened as a result of this investigation, and people have died, and Serena there's been so much intensity, so much emotion, so much loss in Duluth in this book that Serena is just sort of numb. She can't even cry about this, and then what happens is the door to Cat's bedroom opens, and she realizes that Cat has chosen to stay home and not slip out into the night the way Serena thought that she had, and just realizing that this one little thing has changed about Cat is the tipping point where Serena just sort of breaks down and finally is able to cry. And that little moment between Serena and Cat is one of my favorite parts of the book, and I think I try to really expand on that in Alter Ego and really showcase how important this relationship is between Serena and Cat, and Serena both trying to protect her and trying to sort of let her, you know, grow into a young woman as well. So Serena takes her to this cast party up in northern Duluth, and Kat ends up meeting both Dean Casperson and Jungle Jack, and you know, Kat is a little overwhelmed by the whole scene, but she also sort of lets herself get kind of sucked into a couple things that she shouldn't, and Serena is right there to kind of step in and you know, take her away. And it leads to a rather bitter argument between them, and yet you can see the extent to which, you know, these two have begun to rely on each other.
Well, this is why she reminds me of me and my niece, because the only one that could set her straight is me. That's it. Oh, without a doubt. I set her straight this morning about something, too. She texted me yesterday to tell me she's trying out for The Voice on television.
Oh, really?
She's actually... that's what they told me. And she's got the first audition in June in Georgia. And I said to her, you know, it's great that you're doing this, and I really think you should give it a try, but understand that you might not make it. And if you don't, at least you tried. So we'll never know. Yeah, what can I say? So tell us about Dean. Yes, I really think it's cool because my sister had a voice that if The Voice was back then, she probably would have won it. That's how good she was. My niece is starting with a voice coach on Saturday. That should be interesting, too. And I told her, I said, I think that's great. I said, but as a music person and a music major, I said, you need to learn how to read music and play the piano. You need an instrument so that you know the keys that you're going to sing in. So this morning she said she was actually going to ask the school if they can suggest something. So she does listen sometimes. So we've got Dean, and why does he feel that he gets a free pass? His connections, I mean, he could do just about anything and get away with it. How come? I'd love to be able to do that too.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, that's so much what we have seen in the past, you know, what is it, about 8-9 months now. I mean, it is that same story that just comes up again and again and again, and it's not just Hollywood. It's media. It's the business. It's politics. It's It's people, mostly men, who feel that that power gives them a freedom to be able to pretty much get away with anything and be untouchable in their lives. And to a large extent, that has been true. And that was really kind of the dynamic I wanted to create in Alter Ego, is that when you've got that kind of extraordinary power, money, and celebrity that someone like Dean Casperson has, that you pretty much feel as if you can do anything and get away with anything, and that's pretty much been true, because you when you're dealing with, in his case, actresses and others in the business that feel that if they open their mouth, they're torpedoing their entire career. Mm-hmm. The result is that people have tended to stay silent in the face of abuse, and let's hope that that's changing. But I confess to a certain degree of cynicism that in the long run, power and money and celebrity still have a way of getting what they want.
As we know on the news, we can tell. There's a whole bunch of them that think they can above the law. What can I say? So we have a reporter. And she wants to meet with Stride, but he's not stupid. He gets the point. He agrees to meet with her, and then when does he realize that somebody wants to take him down? And that's not going to happen in this book or any book, I hope. No,
yeah,
seriously.
I love the. That's one of the fun things about bringing a movie set to Duluth is that I also have the opportunity to bring in some of the media that operates on the fringes of the movie biz as well. So you have this tabloid reporter in Duluth who's trying to dig up dirt and secrets about the movie and the cast and what's going on. And clearly here you have a movie based on one of Stride's old cases. And so not surprisingly, they would have some interest in who Stride is and what his past is like. And Stride, of course, being the man he is, has absolutely no interest in seeing his face in the paper or being profiled or interviewed by these folks. But as someone tells him, when your name is in a movie, you sort of give up your privacy, and there is always someone out there that is looking to cut you down to size. And so Stride finds out pretty quickly that someone is out there that would like to take him down. And this reporter sort of becomes a conduit for revealing things about Stride's past that he certainly has no interest in seeing in print, and it may even go deeper than that into what they're trying to do to him.
I agree. This yesterday I looked myself up and I said, I didn't know that. Seriously, I was like, really? And the internet is scary. Yeah. And I said, I really, do I know this? Did that really happen? I have no idea. And it's scary,
yeah. There are a lot of pages out there about me that I certainly did not create. And it's kind of funny that there's just that level of a little bit of celebrity out there that all of a sudden folks are writing about you and creating things about you that you never even realize exist until you happen to go out and run a search.
It's scary because my 11-year-old nephew was on the phone with me for 4 hours the other day. He was bored. He needed to talk to somebody fun.
4 hours?
And he Googled me and he was Googling me, and he said, I didn't know you did this. I didn't know you did that. And then he asked me to send him all my books so he could read them, and I was like, oh, finally, you got the point. So, yeah, you don't know. So now we've got, tell us about Maggie and why she goes to Florida to learn about the death of Haley Adams, who is really somebody else. And why didn't anybody know that this person was who she is or was? That was interesting.
Well,
Maggie,
of course, is one of my all-time favorite characters in the Stride series.
Yeah.
She just makes me smile every time she walks on stage because she has this very snarky, sarcastic, ironic outlook on life. And, Maggie has had... a lot of ups and downs in her love life, and I have to say probably mostly downs over the course of the Stride series. And yet, she just keeps on keeping on, and she just figures, well, that's the way life is, and she's focused mostly on her work anyway. So, but Maggie is digging into a crime that seems to be connected to what has happened out on this lonely road with this this John Doe with the with the Glock, and they discover that there's an intern from Duluth on the set of the movie who has vanished, and her name was Haley Adams, and so Maggie is digging into this. To try to find out who was Haley Adams and how did she disappear. And they discover that they actually have sort of two ghosts in Duluth, because you have this man who was out on the country road that died, who had a stolen identity. And she soon discovers that Haley Adams had a stolen identity as well, and she was not who she claimed to be. And so they don't know who either of these people are, and yet there seems to be a connection between them. And the connection steers Maggie toward a case, a murder that happened down in Florida, and she realizes that there's a clear forensic link between whatever happened in Duluth and what happened in this case a few years ago back in Florida. And so she ends up heading down to that part of the world and escaping the bitter driving winds of January in Duluth to get a little respite on the hot beaches of Naples, Florida, and so the book sort of gives you both a look at the cold and a look at the sunshine as well.
She also gets to look at something else that we'll get to in a while. Finally, yeah, that's my other question at the end. Okay, so we've got Rachel Wall. Why was she at the cast party, and why does Dean? He's not a very nice person. These girls really shouldn't go out with him. Really, they need to learn better. Seriously.
Well, there's another disappearance in Duluth that appeared to be completely unrelated to everything, and the more they dig into it, the more that Serena in particular begins to realize that there may in fact be some connections between this other incident in Duluth and everything that's been going on in the course of the movie set. Yeah, that's the thing about these Hollywood movie sets is there's an awful lot of praying going on, praying with an E, not an A, that involves these Hollywood gatherings, and that's the kind of thing that that Stride and Serena and Maggie are now trying to expose and root out as they take on the people in this cast.
Well, now for the good part. If you hear any noise, I just heard it. I didn't know it was going to happen. They're doing something outside my window. I have no clue what. They're probably fixing something, and maybe they'll stop. I don't hear it that hot, that badly, but it's there. So what happens when Kat, this was so cool. First of all, I love Kurt. So, and he's such a, you know, this, I'm telling you, she so reminds me of my niece. It's scary. So what happens when Kat decides to go along with her friend Kurt to spy on Dean? And what kind of trouble does she get into this time? And yeah,
well,
would I
you
do
know,
something
I,
like
I,
that? Definitely, yes.
It's such a 17-year-old girl kind of thing. I love the fact that Kat is you know just utterly fearless about you know sticking herself into situations that she doesn't belong in.
Yeah.
And they never go well for her, and yet you know she's also got kind of a heart of gold about trying to get to the truth. And she has this friend Kurt Dix. Who has appeared in several of the books now. He's become kind of an important little minor character in the series as well. And he's one of these sort of scam artists that always is trying to find some new little game to play and some new little con to run around Duluth. And yet, you know, at heart, he loves Duluth. He's passionately committed to his city. He's not a bad kid. He just constantly is sort of taking the slightly dishonest road with things. And Kat has a little bit of a crush on Kurt, which drives Serena crazy. And even Kurt feels like Kat is taking things too far and is trying to sort of restrain her and hold her back. And Kat will have none of that. And so. When Kat begins to suspect that that there are some nasty things going on with these Hollywood folks. She is intent on trying to spy on what's really going on and try to get the truth in a way that Stride and Serena can't, because they've got to follow the rules. And needless to say, she uncovers things, but does it in a way that puts her in jeopardy. And I sort of love this you know, chase scene through the snowy woods of this rented estate in Duluth, with a cat trying to clutches of security as Kurt is waiting to yank her back over the wall. So it was one of the most enjoyable scenes in the book to write.
It was really, that was typical cat. And would I do something like that? No, but with somebody else, yeah, sure. Yeah,
exactly.
When I was younger, probably. When I was younger, probably, yeah. So we've got Amy. And we've got Laurie, the fourth victim. Why in heaven blazes did she have to meet her? And why did Laurie want to see what she was doing? She wanted her to coach her in the role, which was scary. I was getting claustrophobia just thinking about being in that cage. Oh, my God.
Yes. Well, you know, there are so many alter ego relationships in this book.
Yeah.
And that was one of, I mean, the primary one, obviously, is between Stride and Dean Casperson, who's playing him in the movie. And yet,
yeah,
there are all sorts of other ways in which you see sort of these alter ego relationships between the characters. And one of them is between Laurie Fulkerson and Amy Bowe, the actress who is playing her in the movies. You know, again, Amy is one of these you know, intent method actors who wants to get everything right, and she's dealing with a victim who doesn't want to really take her inside this experience. As you say, what went on in that cage was very claustrophobic and very scary, and yet Amy is able to sort of tease details out of Laurie as they meet and talk, and then Amy tries to put those lessons to work in this role, and the question is whether life starts to imitate art in a particularly shocking way.
Well, then she disappears. Well, we won't say how. She's missing, and that made it really scarier. So, now I got to bring this guy in. You brought back Cab Bolton and Maggie. And how come they all of a sudden they get together? And is this going to be permanent? Because I would love to see what would happen if Cab came and lived near Stride and they had to work together all the time. I don't know. So
I don't know.
Serious.
I have a hard time imagining Cab Bolton on a long-term basis in Duluth, Minnesota.
Yeah, me
but,
too.
You know, I mentioned that when the original concept for this book, back when I was thinking through the plot line, I originally thought that it would be the next Cab Bolton novel. Cab first appeared in my book, The Bone House, as really as a supporting character in the novel. And yet after The Bone House came out, I had a lot of readers who were writing to me saying, oh, we love Cab as a character, can we get more Cab? And it took me a couple of years, but I finally wrote another Cab Bolton novel called Season of Fear, and that was based completely down in Florida, and so I had now this parallel series going on with Stride and Cab. And ever since Season of Fear, of course, people have wanted to get another Cab book out there, and it just has not worked out in the creative timing of things. I haven't been able to write another Cab novel. But as I thought about the plot line for Alter Ego and the fact that it started out with Cab in my head, I thought, well, maybe there's a way that we could actually develop this as a crossover novel and find a way to bring Stride and Cab together. And, you know, readers have asked about that for a long time. There's sort of a natural reader tendency that you want to see these heroes meet each other. I know Agatha Christie used to say that readers were constantly writing to her saying, well, are Poirot and Miss Marple ever going to meet? And her attitude was, oh my God, they would hate each other if they ever met. So she never did it. But, you know, look at someone like Michael Connelly, and he, you know, brought Harry Bosch together with his lead character from The Lincoln Lawyer, and actually even established a familial relationship between them. But I had always said, well, I just don't know. I don't know if it would work. I don't, you know, they're very different characters. The stories I tell with Cab tend to be different from the stories I tell with Stride. But I always said if there was one character that sort of seemed to bridge the two series, it was Maggie, because Maggie has a sort of a similar sarcastic outlook on life that Cab does, and Maggie has always had a sort of star-crossed love life. So I thought, you know, if Maggie ever had a chance to meet Cab, there might be some sparks flying there, and so that was. That was what I chose to do in Alter Ego, is to bring in some threads in this investigation that lead Maggie to Florida, and well, who was the detective that was working on this old case that she's trying to tie into the investigation in Duluth, but Cab Bolton back when he was working for the Naples police. And so at that point we have the opportunity to see how Maggie and Cab get together, and ultimately to bring Cab and Stride together as well. I confess I got a little bit of a wonderful chill when I reached the line where I was able to rate Jonathan Stride meet Cab Bolton. That was a lot of fun.
Well, I wrote it at the end, Bolton versus Stride. Which one do you like better? Or something in my review. Yeah, seriously. Yeah, Emil, uh-huh. As a matter of fact, I just put it on Facebook, Stride versus Bolton, ? And... yeah, I like both of those characters, but Maggie,
I like them both too. But it's hard to choose between them. They're just two very different men. And you know, Stride is older and you know, intense and determined and very, very serious kind of guy. Cab is younger. He's got money, so he does this because he wants to do it, not because he has to do it. And he's never had to struggle in quite the same way. And as a result, he kind of takes everything in life seriously except himself, and that makes him an entertaining character to write.
Now, the other person that I absolutely adore, because she holds no bars, and she takes no prisoners, because she's the only one that could tell Cab what to do, is Tarla. I love Tarla. Yeah, she's so like my mother, it scares me. Maggie meets Tarla, and what happens with that? And if the minute she speaks, Cab goes, yeah, okay, that's it. You know, whatever. So, could just say whatever she wants. How come? I mean, I love this lady.
Tarla,
she's great.
Tarla is Cab's mother, and is a famous Hollywood actress in her own right. I have always loved the relationship between Cab and Tarla. Tarla does not appear in the Bonehouse, but you'd swear that she did, because her spirit kind of sifts through everything that's going on with Cab in the Bonehouse. And so I knew when I wrote Season of Fear that Tarla would have to be a major presence in that. And so you meet her as an actual character in Season of Fear, and Tarla and Cab and Tarla have this wonderful sort of sniping back and forth relationship where Cab wants to spend time with his mother and yet wants to make sure he's got sort of a healthy distance between himself and his mother. And they're sort of joking back and forth with each other. And you know, Tarla pulls Cab's strings and Cab knows it. It's just one of my favorite relationships among my books is Cab and Tarla. So yes, so in Alter Ego, Maggie is in the mix here and has a chance to meet Tarla and is a little bit starstruck, which is unusual for Maggie, but you know, she obviously knows this actress from the movies and just sort of ends up standing there, you know, mouth agape, watching this bullet speed ricocheting back and forth dialogue between Cab and his mother, it's sort of unlike anything Maggie's ever seen.
Now, I wonder what would happen, because I take notes while I'm doing this, everybody. So Maggie, he's okay, but he's not dynamic, but he's nice. And Cab has Lala, whatever. So they can't seem to decide whether they want each other or somebody else. So what would happen if Maggie was assigned to work in Florida then? Would that ever happen? So then the other girl would just have to take a backseat and leave. Well, maybe.
We'll just have to see what happens. But yeah, that's the thing. I mean, both Cab and both Cab and Maggie have sort of had star-crossed love lives. Maggie has had plenty of painful sagas in her love life. Her husband was murdered all the way back and stalked, and things have not gone well for her ever since then. And she has what seems to be the first sort of stable relationship in her life with this sort of almost a weightlifter sort of looking guy, Troy Grange, who works for the Duluth Port Security. And they seem to have a solid relationship. And yet when it starts to get closer, Maggie sort of turns and runs. And you know, Cab is in kind of a similar situation. He's had an on again, off again relationship with another cop, a Cuban Florida cop named Lala Mosqueda. And she appeared in both The Bone House and Season of Fear, and you know, and Cab and Lala are sort of magnets, two magnets. You know, they keep getting closer and closer, pulled closer and closer together. But as soon as they get too close, they sort of push each other away, and they run hot and cold all the time. And at the moment in Alter Ego, Cab and Lala are running cold, and and so are Maggie and Troy. And so in the midst of this, as Ross on Friends would say, they were taking a break, and so suddenly you have Maggie and Cab getting together in the midst of this, so is that the kind of relationship that goes anywhere? Who knows? We'll see. I've learned to never say never in this business.
This is true, because you don't know if Jonathan Stride's going to want to give up Maggie, but I think Serena would be happy if she took a hike somewhere.
You're probably right about that, yes.
Well, before I forget, in case anybody thinks I'm not going to show up the rest of this week, think again. We've got Abuse and Discretion by Pamela Samuel Young, and it's about sexting and what happens when a boy... Somebody puts a picture on his phone, and he doesn't delete it. He gets arrested. It's very scary. On the 14th, we've got Dead Air. On the 17th, Somebody Everybody Knows, Nancy Allen. She's a riot. Walk in the Woods. On the 24th, we've got Lying, Cheating, and Sometimes Murder. We've got a very, very, very scary, paranormal, scary, horrible X-File kind of book. It's really good, Preordained. On the 31st, we have another one. And on the 4th, I'm going to do a panel show with endings with 5 authors, or maybe who knows how many people are going to show up. We're going to talk about what happens when you write the end of the book and it doesn't quite end, and the villain comes back. That makes me happy. On the 31st, it's Burn One Down with Jeffrey Cooper. On the 6th, we've got Dangerous Places. On the 7th, we've got a New York Times author, and on the 13th is my last show, Evil Winds with Michael Shusko from Japan, and I'm doing this show at 7 o'clock in the morning because it's 8 o'clock their time, so that should be interesting, and it's Philip Donnelly, Speed the Dawn, on the 7th, and then the next show is August 1st. I'm not doing anything in July. And do you come to the Thriller Fest ever in the Grand Hyatt?
I'm not going this year. I've been a couple times. I was very honored to be there, in particular in 2013, because that was when Spilled Blood won the award for Best Hardcover Novel in the Thriller Awards. And that was one of the great, great moments of my life. I had been there, I think, 2 years earlier, because The Burying Place was a finalist for Best Hardcover Novel in the Thriller Awards. So the Thriller Awards are a wonderful thing, and it's a great way for readers to discover some amazing books out there.
Well, I'm invited again. Kimberly Cow invited me. Yeah, I was like so excited. She said, "Are you coming?" I go, "Can I come, please?" And yeah, they invited me to come to the Grand Hyatt. I'll be there from the 13th to the 15th. Probably just coming to see the classes, because my husband loves the panels and stuff like that. And she promised me that somehow they're going to get me to meet George Martin from Game of Thrones is going to be there. And I'm hoping I get an introduction. That would really be exciting, going, please stare at him and take a picture. So, seriously, yeah. It's going to be a whole bunch of famous people there that I know, but I get quiet sometimes, not really. So what Kat decides, this was so cool, that she's going to take Dean to another place. She's going to take him down. Why does she decide to do that? That was kind of dangerous. And when Stride realizes what's going on, what does he do?
Well, and I obviously won't go into details, but one of the things that proved sort of, again, unexpectedly topical about the book was the way in which teenagers can have a pretty big impact on what's going on in the world. I mean, you saw this with the Parkland survivors and how their voices mm-hmm. have really had an impact on the a lot of the political discussions that have been going on in the country. And here in Alter Ego, which again written months before any of this was happening, you've got Kat who is sort of bullheaded enough and courageous enough to just decide that she's going to do something about this situation when the law and the media and the rules of celebrity say there's nothing you can do about what's going on. Kat decides, well, mm-hmm. she's not going to have any of that. She's going to try to see if she can change things all by herself. And of course, it's a very courageous thing to do. But in these circumstances, what she's thinking about is also foolish and extraordinarily risky. And she puts herself in some extreme jeopardy along the way.
Yes, she does. So what happens when Stride realizes that where is Amy? So can he do anything about it?
Well, that's the thing about my books is the past always has a way of coming back to haunt you. And here you have a movie being filmed in Duluth about a case from Stride's past. That's what The Caged Girl is all about. And it's supposedly a case that was settled and done, and the perpetrator was put away long ago. And yet the case seems to come back to life in a rather horrifying way. And suddenly Amy Bo, who has been playing one of the victims in this movie, it seems as if she has become a victim herself, which is a bit of a challenge because supposedly whoever was involved in doing this has been dead for years. So Stride has to sort of look back on what really happened in those old days and decide is it possible that he made a mistake in the past about what was mm-hmm. What was really going on.
And he's haunted by that.
Like. One of the things I like about Stride, really, ironically, yeah. is that he's not a superhero. I mean, he makes mistakes. He doesn't always see things exactly the way they are, and that makes him a real person. And I think that's one of the reasons that readers relate to him so intensely and emotionally is because they can see that in him. And he's not a bulletproof Jack Reacher kind of guy. He's a man with strengths and weaknesses and flaws, and he has this intensity and determination to get to the truth. And yet sometimes he goes down the wrong path.
You know what? It would be boring if he didn't have some flaws or conflicts or obstacles, because if the main character, the protagonist, solves it too fast, she's sort of like, oh, God, I knew that before I started. There have been times, of course not in a Brian Freeman book, where I've read the first chapter and I said, well, I got that. I know who did it. And I'm usually right. After reading a couple of thousand murder mysteries. Yeah. And if you want to know what to read, people, buy them from the beginning and get all of the Jonathan Stride and Cab Bolton books. I just got, and it's not out yet, A Steep Price by Robert Jagone. It's a Tracy Crosswhite book. It's really good. And a book that was sent to me, but I didn't know I was getting it, is The Execution and Persecution of the Traitor George Washington by Charles Rosenberg. And it's going to take me time to read it because it's really good, but the print is very small. So that's just, I'm reading 10 books at a time because I have to keep my mind going. So when it comes all together, we know that there's sexual abuse, abuse of powers, greed, money, power, abuse of connections, and every one of the characters in this book, and I didn't get to her yet, but we'll get to her in a minute, is Dean, his wife, Mo, I didn't like her, Lori, Jack, Stride, and Serena. Every one of these have two sides to them. So tell us, we have a few more minutes, about Mo and Dean's wife and their unusual relationship.
Yeah, well, Mo is Dean Casperson's wife, and in this celebrity marriage,
yeah.
And they've been unlike many Hollywood marriages, they've been together for decades, ever since they were teenagers together. And you know, I think you see some of that in some of the things that have been going on lately with some of the real life celebrities, that you can sometimes have this. This spouse in the background that seemingly doesn't know anything that's going on, but perhaps it's more willful blindness that they've sort of managed to sort of shut out the darker aspects of this person for years and years and years. And I think that's what Maggie finds with Mo Casperson as well, is that she is fiercely dedicated to her husband's reputation and maintaining her husband's reputation,
mm-hmm.
even as evidence piles up that perhaps there is another side to him.
Oh, there's another side to everybody, including all of us, including me too. Who knows? And that's what makes people interesting, because there was only one side of you, you'd be boring. So, this is one of Fran's questions that I just wrote down. Would you ever... We're going to talk about what's next. We have about 5 minutes. What's next for Stride and my other cat? I love Frost Eason. I really do love him. And Cab. Would you ever put the three of them in the same novel?
And yeah, I knew
really?
that question. Now that I put two together, I knew I was going to start getting the question about whether I'd put three together. I don't know. That. I'm trying to envision a plot flitting from Naples, Florida to Duluth to San
yeah.
Francisco. And you never know. Again, I've learned that you can't. You can't say never in this business. There might certainly be mm-hmm. opportunities for you know, some of these characters to come together. Frost is my new San Francisco-based hero, and the Nightbird was the book that introduced Frost last year. And
mm-hmm.
it was one of the top 20 Kindle bestsellers of 2017, so it was a huge hit. I was just thrilled with the reader reaction to the book and to Frost Eason in particular. And my new Frost book is The Voice Inside, that came out in January. And you know, when you write a follow-up book to a really successful book like The Nightbird, you always wonder, well, how are readers going to react? And I have been so thrilled with the response to The Voice Inside. Folks that absolutely fell in love with The Nightbird have generally liked The Voice Inside even better. And that's the kind of thing that warms an author's heart.
I know, and I really like Frost Eason. Seriously, I love The Nightbird. Everybody, go on my site, Just Reviews, because they're all there. Every one of Brian's books are there. Just click on Brian Freeman, and you'll see all of them. Every one of them, including the new one, Alter Ego. I posted it the right day that it came out. I remembered. And for those of you that know, The Murder She Wrote. John Lynn was on the other day, and A Date with Murder. He's writing the new Jessica Fletcher Murders. And if you haven't read A Date with Murder or Alter Ego, I don't know what you're waiting for, seriously. The book was absolutely fantastic. R.Z. Belsky, Yesterday's News, he was on last week. And Matt Coyle for Blood Truth, and he's coming back on. I booked a show for him for December 4th. So, this is the other question. Here we go. Maggie, will she ever be happy? Is she ever going to decide which one she wants? Or are we going to keep her guessing forever?
Poor Maggie.
I know Serena doesn't particularly like her. She's a great police person, but knowing the relationship there, I can understand why I would want her to move to Siberia. Seriously.
Yeah, poor Maggie. You know, every time I try to put her in a stable relationship, it somehow seems to blow up in her face. So
yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. I always believe that there's room for a happy ending for everybody somewhere along the line. So Maggie will just have to keep trying, and we'll see what happens in the books ahead.
I agree with you, because if she's too happy, then we would not have enough conflict, and that would be sad. As long as you don't put her against Serena, because I think Serena would win this one. I don't think so. No, seriously. She, you know, I like Serena. She's tough and everything. And so what about Kat? What is she going to be up to next? And what's next for my favorite character, Jonathan Schreit? By the way, everybody, I don't know if you saw it, but I think I put it for last month, you know, top books for the month of March, and April was men that are great authors. And June... this month is people that write memoirs and books about real life incidents, but June is going to be honor strong characters. So I will be listing them on June 1st, all of the books that I've read, a million of them, with the strong characters that I think everybody should read about. So maybe people's sales will go up. You never know. So what about Kat? What trouble is she going to get into next, if at all?
I'm sure she's going to get into some kind of trouble. And Kat is such a wonderful character. I've loved the story arc for her. She gives me a lot of entrees into things that can happen next for the Stride novels. It's one of the reasons I added her to the series was I thought that she added this really interesting spark of recklessness and unpredictability and courage in one character. And so I don't know what she's going to be doing next, but whatever it is, I'm sure it's going to be it's going to be interesting and fascinating and will probably drive Stride and Serena crazy. So.
We never know. Maybe she'll also try out for a television show. You could never know what Kat's going to do. Seriously.
There you go.
What is Stride going to do next? Is he going to get into something interesting?
I'm still working on that. I've got a very interesting concept in my head for what the next mm-hmm. Stride novel might look like. So I'm starting to shape that out. And then the next Frost Easton book is done. That's in the hands of my publishers now. It is called Crooked Street, and that will be out in January. And then I'm doing a real special project right now. I'm writing an audiobook original for Audible. So that will come out next spring, and we'll introduce a whole new character, a very interesting character, female first-person narration, and so I'm really excited about that project as well. So they're keeping me busy.
They're keeping you busy, too. They're keeping me very busy. I don't know. And for those of you that don't know, Fran has 50 books to review. No, I'm not joking. And I'm getting to them a couple at a time. I'm doing my best, and they're keeping me very busy. And I put on my site Just Reviews my submission guidelines. But if you can't wait at least a month or two, just wait a month or two before you ask me, because it's going to take me a while to do them. And for those of you to straighten out Amazon, I don't get paid to do anything. If I did, that would ruin my fun. I don't get paid to do reviews. I pay for the radio station, which is MJ Network, after my sister, Marcia Joyce, who got me to do all of this. And I'm a reviewer, and I am very excited. My new book came out April 2nd. It's not a novel. It's a caregiver's guide. So for those of you that have people with Alzheimer's, traumatic brain injury, or elder care abuse, it's called Caring for Family Members and Patients Who Need Us Because We Care. And it's on Amazon. It's not a novel, but from what I gather from everyone that's read it, it's very, very helpful. And I am writing the next one. Brian, I could probably use some help from a professional. My grandmother was in a concentration camp, an extermination camp in Poland. So I'm writing her story. Yeah, I'm writing Katie and Max and how they met. And I'm writing, my cousins have been texting me all morning with my grandmother, my father's mother, who was very different than my grandmother. So it's going to be called Katie and Bertha, Two Survivors. And hopefully it'll get out by July or August, as soon as Fran says time to sit down and write it, finish writing it. So where can we, with all these book reviews and everything else, I have no time. Plus I'm the homework helper, so that does help too. Okay, so where can we find out more about Brian and your books? And I can't wait to get the next one. Just remember, just send it. Don't even worry about it. Send it.
Absolutely. Readers can go out to my website, which is bfreemanbooks.com. That's all one word, bfreemanbooks.com. They can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/bfreemanfans, or on Twitter at bfreemanbooks, or Instagram at bfreemanbooks. And they can also have a lot of fun by going out to Facebook and following my wife's page, which is facebook.com/theauthorswife. And Marcia posts all sorts of fun little blog entries about the quirky little things that come up in our life in the publishing biz. So you can find us all over social media, and both of us love hearing from readers and getting messages from readers. So we encourage everyone to write to us, friend us, and like us on Facebook and Twitter and everywhere else.
Well, I just want you to know that I have an uncle who's 97 years old, and he's got a girlfriend, but he does take time out to read. And for and for his birthday, I sent him a copy of the Frost Easton book, The Voice Inside. And he is going to tell me how he likes it. Well, he's going to call me so we could talk about it, but he absolutely thinks I'm the greatest person on this earth because he loved your books. So I sent him yours.
Wonderful.
And I sent him John Sanford, and I sent him Steve Barry, and I'm probably going to send him this one, too, because he's going to want it. And I just sent him, I don't know if you know Alan Topol, the Russian resurgence.
Yeah.
They're friends. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Alan was on last week, and I love Alan. And I'm going to do a panel show, everybody, on June 4th. We're going to talk about endings and what happens when you know that the villain just might win. And the protagonist, oh, well, too bad, might lose. So on that show, we're going to have Bruce Coffin, Charles Salzberg, John Lansing, and Alan Topol, and possibly R.Z. Belsky. I'm not sure. We'll find out when I email everybody with my interesting questions as soon as I come up with them. But I want to thank you so very, very much. If you ever want to do a panel show, I'll let you know when I'm doing the next one. Probably in September. Like I said, I'm taking the month of July off, and
good,
I'm going to start back on August 1st with the author of The Hiding. And I was very honored to know that the author of, everybody's heard of Chicken Soup for the Soul? Well, the author and creator of Chicken Soup for the Soul, Amy Newmark, will be on my show August 8th. I am totally excited. So I can't wait to get another Brian Freeman book. Whichever you write, no matter what it is, just send it my way. You know I'll figure it out. Thank you so much, Brian. Everybody, it's a beautiful day outside. Have a great day, and bye.